Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Second Chance by Heather Brewer, performed by Alexander Sendiz.
Prologue. Killian whipped around the corner of the building, his long hair flowing behind him, his coat billowing in the wind. His heart beat steadily in an unhurried pace. His breaths came even and smooth. But Killian was terrified and didn't know where to go, or who could possibly help him. He was alone now but for his tormentors. His brother, Jacek, was nowhere to be found. Perhaps they'd killed him. Perhaps Killian had no brother now. He pressed his back against the brick wall, sinking as deeply as he could into the shadows, hoping against all reason that the vampires who'd been hunting him would give up their chase. His stomach rumbled, and inside Killian's mouth his fangs elongated. He was hungry, famished. He hadn't had a drop of blood to eat for 2 days. He needed sustenance, especially if he was going to be forced to face off with 4 vampires who were much older, much craftier, and much stronger than him. But the city streets were eerily quiet, and even though Killian was straining his ears to listen, he couldn't hear any human heartbeats in the near vicinity. But he did hear something. Something that made his breath catch in his throat and his hands clench into nervous fists at his sides. Laughter. And footsteps. He wasn't certain which scared him more, but he did know that both belonged to 4 different people, and those people, those vampires, were headed straight for him.
Come out, wherever you are,
called a sing-songy voice that he could only attribute to Boris. Killian turned his head, peering down the street, at first in the direction that the voice had come from, and then the other way. There was no escaping them, that much he knew. He could run, but they would find him. They were relentless, and nothing he could do would stop their pursuit of him. But that didn't mean he wasn't going to try. With a deep breath, he darted down the street with vampiric speed. He came to a stop several alleys over. His ears were greeted with only a moment's silence before the brothers found him once again. This time, it was Cage who spoke.
You'd think a vampire would remember that the rush of adrenaline only makes the blood taste that much sweeter.
Laughter, cold and hollow, followed. Then a smaller, less confident voice chimed in with marked hesitancy.
The Council's put a warrant out for us. Maybe it would be wise to stop killing humans in the open now and beg for M's forgiveness. She might be lenient.
Lenient? When in M's existence has she ever proven to be lenient when a vampire has broken the law?
Their voices put them just around the corner from Killian, and even though there were a million places he could run, Killian felt trapped. A thread of panic tickled its way up his spine.
Curtis is right, Sven. M will kill us for our crimes. That is, unless we give her reason not to.
Killian could hear the smirk on Boris's lips.
That lethal stunt pulled by Slayers in the Catskills last summer. I just got wind that the Slayer Society is calling that group in to deal with us. If we bring her the head of the Slayer responsible, she might find it in her stone-cold heart to forgive our crimes.
What about our friend here?
Killian darted his eyes all around, but couldn't see them, couldn't even sense their presence anymore as the terror took hold of him at last. He couldn't breathe, he could barely move, and the exhaustion of running from them was finally catching up to him.
Taking the life of a fellow vampire would be a breaking the highest law. Is handing over one Slayer really going to ease M's temper after that?
His fingers were trembling as he traced his hand along the brick wall, stepping back, deeper into the alley. He had to get away from them long enough to regroup his thoughts, to quell his panic. If he didn't regain control of himself,
over 20 died in that blast. I say we kill him.
So do it already.
A hand reached out from the darkness. Teeth followed. Chapter 1. The Sad Reality. Joss lifted his suitcase from the trunk of his dad's car and turned to say something to his dad, something light and conversational, about how it was good to be home, even though it wasn't. Not really. But the side door of the gray house that they now called home was already slamming closed. So much for his homecoming. The drive from the airport had been long and silent, a strange, indescribable tension hanging in the air between he and his dad. It was like riding in the car with a stranger who couldn't stand the sight of you. Worse, though, far worse, because the stranger was his father. The silence had given Joss time to reflect on the school year that he'd just spent away, however. Not that they were pleasant memories. In the beginning, they had been. Joss had lived with his favorite cousin, Henry, and he had befriended a boy named Vlad. Only Vlad turned out to be not a boy at all, but instead a vampire. Just like Cyrus. Joss had been duped twice now by vampires, taunting him with the gift of friendship, only to have them rip it away again with their horrible, menacing fangs. He was done with friends. He was done with searching for companionship. He only had his want of vengeance now, and the sense of duty and honor that had been given to him by the Slayer Society. And his stake, of course. Inside his right front jeans pocket, his cell phone buzzed to life. He withdrew it and flipped it open to read the incoming text message. It was her, again. He wasn't exactly certain how Kat had gotten his cell number, but she'd been sending him messages for days now, each one more troubling than the last. This one was brief. Are you going home for the summer, Joss? Must be nice to have a family to go home to. I'm coming for you. Don't forget it. K. He chewed the inside of his cheek briefly, considering a reply, but then thought better of it and flipped the phone closed again. Kat would have to wait. He shut the trunk and lugged his bag across the lawn to the door, remembering a time when he and his family had lived in a yellow house, a house that had been filled with sunshine and laughter and love. It felt like those memories had transpired over a million years ago, in a time that they'd all forgotten. For a brief moment, Joss wondered if that time, when Cecile had been alive and their family had been whole, had just been a dream. But then he shook his head. No, it couldn't have been a dream. Not one of Joss's, anyway. His dreams were dark. His dreams were awful, haunting images that never let the goosebumps on his flesh settle. His dreams were nightmares. Nightmares about Cecile. As he moved toward the house, he thought about the dreams that had been tormenting him since his sister's demise, about how they usually featured flowers in some way, and he wondered if they would ever stop. But he also wondered if they were just dreams, or if, as crazy as it sounded, Cecile was reaching out from beyond the grave, hell-bent on revenge. He didn't like having those thoughts, so much so that he usually pretended that he never had them. But the fact was that he spent too much time worrying about his dream sister in ways that he had never worried about Cecile. The dream Cecile scared him more than anything, even vampires, and he always felt so powerless against her. She carried messages with her, messages of his impending doom, impending death. And he worried, as silly as it seemed, that his death would not come from his job as a slayer, but from Cecile herself. It was stupid to think those things, and if ever asked, Joss would have laughed off the notion that he believed his dreams could ever physically hurt him. But the truth was, he wasn't at all convinced that they couldn't. As he pulled open the screen door and lifted his bag over the threshold, he spied his mother sitting at the dining room table, that faraway look in her eye. Joss knew that look well, as it had been growing steadily worse every day since Cecile had died. His mother was a fragile creature, in ways that she had never been fragile before. He kept his voice low so as not to startle her. Hi, Mom. How are you? She glanced up from her sad fog and nodded, forcing a small smile. It made Joss's heart break to see his mother acting as well.
Fine, Joss. I'm just fine. How was your trip, dear?
Stepping inside, he closed the door behind him and set his suitcase beside the laundry cabinet.
It was interesting.
A lady sitting beside me on the plane was very chatty.
Nice chatty?
In a moment of pure awkwardness, he simply nodded and smiled. They were both actors now, and he hoped against hope that his mother couldn't see through this facade the way that he could see through hers. He pulled a chair out and sat down at the table, grateful for this time, this moment with his mother before his father started in on him about something he'd done wrong in the 5 seconds he'd been home. Their relationship, his and his dad's, had changed dramatically since Cecile's funeral. His father had pulled away into a protective cocoon, and no amount of hugs or talks or high fives could break through that barrier. It was as if,
through Cecile dying, his entire family had perished as well. He would have done anything to change it, to turn back time and have his family again. But there was nothing, Joss was slowly realizing, that he could do to restore their happiness. So he was doing the next best thing, hunting down the vampire that had destroyed them all. And when he found the beast, he was going to make it suffer.
Joss!
The look on his father's face as he entered the room was one of irritation.
Take care of your luggage. I shouldn't have to tell you that. You're old enough to start taking some real responsibility around here.
Joss's ears burned slightly. If his dad only knew that he was incredibly responsible, that he'd been charged with saving humankind, that he was someone that the world was unknowingly relying on for support. But his dad didn't know that, would never know that. As Abraham had taught Joss, being a slayer was a thankless job, and one that had to be kept in the strictest secrecy, even from your parents.
Sorry, Dad. I'll take care of it right away.
Joss pushed his chair back and stood, reaching immediately for his suitcase. As his father turned from the room, he grumbled,
We still have to discuss that report card of yours, young man.
Joss wrapped his fingers around the handle of his suitcase and picked it up, letting his eyes follow his father out of the room. He missed his dad more than anything, maybe even more than he missed Cecile, but he knew deep down that the father he had known and loved was gone for good, forever changed by an experience that haunted them all like a shadow in the corner of every room. With a heavy heart, he moved up the stairs to his bedroom without another word. He'd only been to the room once before, just long enough to move some boxes inside. Then he was in the car and on his way to the airport, his dad lecturing him on how to behave while he was living at Aunt Matilda and Uncle Mike's house. He hadn't even had a chance to unpack before moving on to Bathory, to a life that would bring him in close contact with a vampire called Vladimir Todd. He clenched his fists at the thought before entering his room. His bed was unmade, and lining the walls were piles of small boxes containing most of Joss's insect collection and books. The room looked more like a temporary storage facility than a teenage boy's bedroom, and didn't exactly provide the welcome home feeling he'd been daydreaming about. He lifted the bag and set it on top of the trunk at the foot of his bed, then retrieved a set of sheets, blanket, and pillow from the linen closet in the hall. For now, anyway, this house was home to him, so it was time to settle in and remind his parents, in whatever subtle way that he could manage, that they hadn't lost both of their children that night. They still had a son. After making his bed, he reached for a box on top of the nearest stack and pulled it down, setting it on the floor by his feet. He crouched and tore the lid free from the packaging tape that had held it closed. Inside, under a wad of newspaper, were a stack of carefully bubble-wrapped frames. At a glance, he recognized them as some of his favorite collected specimens. He lifted them out and set them gently on the bed, then returned his attention to the box. The remainder of it was filled with books. Looking around the room briefly, Joss located his bookcase and picked up an armful of books. It was time to get to work. Time to put things away. An hour later, his bed was crisply made, his bookcase was full and neatly organized, and the shelves on the wall were home to his favorite specimens. On his nightstand sat a small silver frame containing a photograph of Cecile. Not nightmare Cecile, but real Cecile, the sweet blonde cherub who had brightened his life the moment he'd seen her in the hospital nursery. He broke down the boxes as he emptied them, stacking the cardboard neatly in the hall outside his door. It was another mindless task, one where he didn't have to think about his shattered family or his botched private job or the betrayal of his closest non-family friend to date, and he welcomed it. He had seen too much in the past year of his life that he couldn't forget, that he couldn't numb away with the aid of video games and mass quantities of caffeine. And now, with the betrayal of Vlad, he was in danger of losing his cousin Henry as well. It was unbearable to be so alone, to know that he had no one who he could rely on, that, apart from the Slayer Society, he was on his own. And the idea that Henry could even consider siding with a vampire against him, it sickened Joss. It hurt him, in ways that Henry could never understand. So Joss needed mindless tasks. He needed a void in which he could tumble and roll without a care in the world, so far away from the harsh bleakness of his reality. As he peeled the bubble wrap back from the framed black corsair, Joss smiled. This time it wasn't an act.
This time it was a real, honest, actual smile, brought on by the love of his grandfather and the framed gift he'd bestowed upon Joss before he died. The black corsair was a large insect, and at first glance, there didn't seem to be anything vicious about it at all. But just try explaining that to the May Beetle, the preferred victim of the assassin corsair. The corsair would attack from behind and hold on to their prey with the spongy pads on their legs. They were sneaky, these assassin bugs, deadly, and no one would know it by looking at them, just like a slayer. He'd wished he'd known that his grandfather had been a slayer, but it was probably for the best that he hadn't. It was important for a slayer to keep his position secret, especially from his family. Having that secret revealed could endanger them, and that was inexcusable. Family was important, more important maybe than anything else in the world. His smile slipped, fading away just as quickly as it had come, and Joss set his prized possession on the bed. Stepping over the pile of cardboard, he moved back down the stairs and rummaged in the junk drawer for a hammer and nail. The black corsair, as in every house they'd lived in since he was 8, would hang in its place of honor over his bed. Digging through the drawer, Joss frowned. In this house, much like every house they'd lived in, the nails and screws and batteries and tools and flashlights and weird things that had no place found their home in the junk drawer, but not a single nail was in the drawer. Furrowing his brow, Joss said, "Hey, Mom, where's the nail? I want to hang up my black corsair." His mother was still sitting at the table, but now a steaming cup of tea sat on the table in front of her. Her fingers curled around it, as if huddling for warmth. The teabag string dangled over the cup's edge. He was about to ask her again when something in her eyes shifted, as if the fog had momentarily lifted. "There's a box of them in the garage. Your father can show you." He hesitated before he moved, mostly because he knew what would happen if he asked his father for a nail. They'd discuss his grades or the fact that Joss needed a haircut or something else that had nothing to do with the fact that his dad was still grieving and had turned Joss into the invisible boy. He bit the inside of his cheek until he couldn't bear it anymore. Then, on his way back upstairs, said, "It's okay. I can wait until later." "Oh, Joss, I forgot. This came for you earlier." When he turned back, his mother was sliding a large white envelope across the table toward him. Joss moved back down the steps, retrieved it, and headed upstairs. He was in his bedroom before he ripped the end of the envelope open. When the small parchment bundle tumbled out, his heart picked up its pace some. It was wrapped in a burgundy ribbon and held closed with a wax seal that bore the initials SS, meaning that it could only be from the Slayer Society. He wagered they were simply requesting his final notes on the reconnaissance he'd convinced them he'd done in Bathory, but hoped it was his new assignment, and that it would take him far away from this house and the emotional ghost that haunted it.
"Joss, your presence is required in Manhattan in 2 days' time. There is private business to attend to. Bring your supplies and pack enough clothing for the entire summer. All arrangements have been made. Abraham."
Downstairs, the phone rang shrilly, its metallic jingle echoing through the entire house. Joss heard his mother's voice, but not her words. Then, moments later, he heard his father's deep tones. Opening his suitcase, he emptied it of clean and dirty clothes and began repacking. If Abraham said he was going. And soon.
"Joss! Downstairs, now!"
His father's voice shook him to the core. What once had been immense and immeasurable sadness was now manifesting in his dad in strange, angry ways, and Joss wasn't sure which he preferred, though he honestly preferred neither. But he knew that whenever his father barked, that he should immediately drop whatever he was doing and hurry to wherever his father was barking from, or he'd have hell to pay. So he jumped lightly over his cardboard pile, noting that he should pick it up before his dad saw the mess, and hurried down the stairs, where his parents were now both sitting at the kitchen table. Mom's mug of tea was half gone, its wrinkled teabag lying on a spoon to its left. Joss stood at the end of the table somewhat awkwardly. "Yeah, Dad?"
"Your Uncle Abraham just called."
The look in his father's eyes said that this was something that shouldn't surprise Joss, like he'd orchestrated whatever excuse Abraham had given for getting Joss to Manhattan for the summer. But Joss stood stone-faced, revealing nothing that might so much as hint at the fact that he was privy to more information than his suspicious father. After a moment, his father spoke again.
He's working in conjunction with the Natural History Museum in New York this summer, and thought it might be a good experience for you to tag along, act as an intern. He thought that perhaps the discipline of a job might spark some semblance of responsibility in you. Your mother and I agree.
Relief flooded through Joss, relief that he hated to feel. Those feelings made him a bad person, a bad son, didn't they? He was thrilled to be going somewhere, anywhere out of this house, away from the stress of being there, away from the pain of his day-to-day life. Anywhere was better than the shadow of his parents' grief. Besides, he was looking forward to seeing his fellow slayers again. The summer before this one felt like it had happened a million years ago. He missed them. He even missed Abraham, and wondered if it was possible that Abraham had missed him, in ways that his own parents apparently had not.
You get on a plane in 2 days, so you better get packed.
Joss nodded and turned around, ready to walk back up the stairs, but he was given pause by his father's next words.
But pick up the damn boxes and stick them in recycling first.
His feet felt lighter with the aid of his newfound relief as he moved back up the stairs, and the first thing that Joss did, without complaint, was to gather the pile of broken-down boxes into a heap in his arms and carry them downstairs and out into the garage. While he was out there, he retrieved the hammer and a single nail. Once back in his room, he tapped the nail into the wall above his bed and carefully hung the black Corsair in its place. He hoped that wherever his grandfather was in the ether, wherever he was on his next great adventure, that he was looking on his grandson with an approving smile. Because Joss might not be the greatest student, the greatest cousin, the greatest friend, or even the greatest son, but he was a slayer, like his grandfather before him. He was dedicated to a cause full of nobility and purpose. He was driven. He was bent on revenge for his withered home life, and though the reward would never be anything concrete, Joss knew that he was doing good. For mankind, for Cecile, for his grandfather. And maybe, just a little, for himself. Chapter 2. Homecoming. Sunshine filtered through the branches of a large oak tree that loomed overhead like a watchtower. At first glance, Joss had no idea where he was. But he knew that tree, knew it very well, though he couldn't quite put his thumb on exactly where he knew it from. The trunk was wider than he could wrap his arms around. Its crooked branches reached so high up into the sky that gazing up at them made Joss's head swim. But it might have been just any old oak tree, if it weren't for the striking feeling of familiarity that clutched Joss tightly in its grasp. An image flashed in his mind. It was bright and quick, but so real that he sucked in a breath before grinning and running around the massive trunk to the other side. The image was a memory, one that came from the day his cousin Henry had first come to visit them at their new yellow house. As he whipped around the tree, the memory engulfed him, and all he could do was smile. Henry couldn't have been more than 8 years old at the time, but it was already clear which of the two of them was in charge of their friendship. Henry made the decisions, and Joss dealt with the aftermath, which usually ended with them in trouble, but was always a spectacular amount of fun. Henry didn't worry about taking care of his sibling or being a good example. That was his brother Greg's job. Henry was the youngest, like Cecile was in Joss's family, and that meant freedom. They'd come to the tree so that Henry could show Joss something he'd brought with him that summer. And though Joss's heart was racing at just what that something might be, and whether or not it would land them both in unimaginable amounts of trouble, he was also anxious to see what his cousin had hidden in the cup of his hand. Henry looked around to make certain they were alone, before holding his hand out and peeling his fingers back. In his palm lay a small pocket knife. Joss gawked at it a moment before speaking.
Wow, that's so cool. Where'd you get it?
Henry beamed.
It's Greg's, but he won't care.
Joss watched as his cousin pulled the blade free, revealing the sheen of metal that had been hidden inside the ivory handle. He'd always envied Henry for having a brother. Not that Cecile wasn't perfectly nice,
but the most she could possibly lend him was a baby doll. And, to an 8-year-old boy, a pocket knife would have been way cooler at the time. He sighed, his eyes on the blade, and said, "I wish I had a brother." Henry was quiet for a moment, then his eyes brightened.
"I'll be your brother, Joss."
A small lump formed in Joss's throat then.
"Really?"
Henry nodded.
"Really, really. Watch this."
Henry stabbed the tip of the knife into the tree and dragged it down, cutting through the bark and into the wood beneath. Then he pulled it free and did it again, forming a crooked X on the trunk. When he was done, he wiped the blade clean on his jeans and closed the knife, slipped it into his pocket, and turned to look at Joss.
"That X marks the spot where we became brothers, Joss. And as long as it's here, we'll always be brothers."
Joss's chest felt so heavy and full of love for his cousin that he didn't really know what to say. After a long pause, searching for the right words, what he came up with was,
"Forever, Henry."
Henry grinned.
"Forever and ever."
As the memory came to a close, Joss reached the other side of the tree. He traced his fingertips along the sun-baked X carving and allowed the smile to slip from his face with the realization that he was standing in the front yard of his old yellow house, the home his family shared when Cecile was still with them. Slowly, he turned around toward the house. Staring in disbelief at his surroundings, he crossed the grass, his sneakers sinking slightly into the lawn, and made his way around the side of the house. How could he be here? How was this even possible? Was he in the past? Had he been transported here somehow? He turned the corner then, and his heart froze before picking up its pace slightly. Cecile was on her knees in the flower bed that edged the house, facing away from him, focused on her task. Ever so carefully, she picked up a small flowering plant and placed it in a hole she'd dug, before covering its roots with rich black soil. As she moved through her task, she hummed a happy tune, one that reminded him of his mother. It was an endearing scene, watching his little sister plant flowers in the garden, so Joss had no idea why witnessing it set his nerves on edge. Apart from the fact that he knew the only way he could see Cecile was to travel back in time. Without turning toward him, Cecile stretched her arm out, pointing to the spade that was lying just out of reach in the grass to her left.
"Will you hand me the shovel, Jossie?"
After a moment of hesitation, one where he questioned whether or not he really had managed to travel back in time without realizing it, and why his sister was outside planting flowers unsupervised, Joss crept forward and crouched, plucking the spade from its spot in the grass and held it out for her. "What are you planting, Cecile?" She didn't respond with words, but instead began digging furiously with her hands, as if her task couldn't wait any longer for the spade that Joss was trying to give to her. Curiosity overtaking him, Joss leaned forward, peering over his sister's shoulder. The earth had been disturbed in a rather haphazard, desperate way, and several new flowers had been planted in crooked rows along the flower bed. And there, in the middle, poking up from the ground, gray and horrible, was a human pinky finger. Joss's heart raced, and his head began to spin. Why was Cecile digging in a place where a body was buried? Did she know about the corpse? Had she seen it? Who did that pinky belong to, and why had the flower bed become their grave? Nausea pushed its way up Joss's intestines, his stomach, his chest, tickling the back of his throat. A dead body, a dead person, in the garden, but why? His throat felt raw as he forced the next question out.
"What are you doing, Cecile?"
Suddenly, Cecile's hand closed over his wrist. He dropped the spade into the grass, his eyes growing ever wider at the image of Cecile's fingernails. They were long and sharp, almost claw-like, and Joss could feel them digging into his skin. He looked at Cecile, who at last turned her head toward him slowly. Her eyes were closed, and she was smiling, and when she spoke, her sing-song voice sent a terrified chill through him.
"I'm digging your grave, Jossie."
Joss pulled his hand back, but Cecile's grip tightened. In a moment of sheer panic, he yanked his hand free, her claws digging bloody tunnels through his skin. As he scrambled backward in a crab walk, his voice shook.
The sun was gone now. No more warmth on his skin. There was only gray and cold and Cecile crawling slowly after him.
I'm not dead. I'm not dead, Cecile. That isn't me in the garden there.
His back met with the trunk of the oak tree. He had no idea he'd made it so far, and all he could do was stare at his sister as she crawled toward him with her eyes closed.
Oh, but you will be. You'll die at the hands of a monster, Jossie, the same way you let me die.
He swore that she could see him, even though she wasn't looking, not even a peek. Her claw-like nails dug into the earth. It was like she was pulling herself along the ground, making her way toward him. He stifled a scream. This was his sister. He had nothing to be afraid of, did he? Her left hand met his ankle and he jumped. Her skin was cold, too cold, and felt lifeless. Her claws dug into him, and she climbed her way up his leg, her smile spreading as she moved. Her teeth were dark gray with spots of black. The sight of them made Joss quiver, but he couldn't look away.
I'm dead, Jossie, and all because of you. And soon you'll be dead, too.
She moved until her face was mere inches from his. The smell of her breath was nauseating, like rotten meat. When Joss opened his mouth to speak, his throat went dry, and his voice came out in a harsh whisper.
But why, Cecile? Why will I be dead?
Slowly, she reached up with one of her claw hands and petted Joss's cheek, leaving traces of dirt and Joss's blood behind. She tilted her head sweetly, as if somewhere inside of this creature his young sister still existed.
Because, Jossie, because bad boys go to hell, especially when they send their sisters there.
Tears welled in Joss's eyes. He opened his mouth again, this time to say that he was sorry for everything that he hadn't done to rescue her the night she died and for failing to avenge her death now that she was gone. But he didn't have a chance to speak. Cecile opened her eyes, revealing deep, dark caverns of black that went on forever. She lunged forward then, and Joss screamed, but not before he noticed two long fangs inside of her hungry mouth. Chapter 3. Bittersweet Reunion. Joss sat up from his nightmare with beads of sweat clinging to his forehead. He was thankful, at that moment, to be almost the last person still on the plane, mostly because he wasn't certain he could handle the sidelong glances from strangers as he lost his cool. The nightmares were getting worse. After powering on his phone again and ignoring another text from Kat, I've decided not to harm your family in any way. Just you, Joss. I'll do you that kindness, the way you didn't for me. K. Joss stood and stretched. He retrieved his backpack from the compartment over his seat and navigated his way down the aisle, pushing away all thoughts of Kat and her threats. She couldn't touch him, could she? In the end, wouldn't the society offer him some protection? He was one of them, after all. But then, maybe they expected him to be strong enough to stand up to an untrained girl. At least, he thought she was untrained. But who knew what her father, Cyrus, had taught her and not told him about? Cyrus was, after all, immensely talented at keeping secrets, like the fact that he was a vampire. Joss forced a smile at the pretty blonde flight attendant, and once she'd wished him a good day, he found his way up the ramp and into LaGuardia Airport. As Joss exited the security area, he breathed a sigh of relief. He'd been on too many flights this week, but thankfully, he sat alone this time, free of any obligation to smile politely as he partook in conversation he really didn't care about. He moved down the hall with purpose, his eyes sweeping the area around him, as always, for any sign of anyone who might not be 100% on the human side. Everyone looked fairly normal as he walked, so he proceeded to the baggage claim area and waited at carousel number 5 for any sign of his black and purple suitcase with the neon green luggage tag that read, "Steal my luggage, wash my clothes." Something hard pressed into Joss's back, and his mind screamed, "Gun!" His heart ceased its beats for a moment, in question of who exactly was behind him and why exactly they were threatening to assault him. A vampire wouldn't use a gun, so clearly the person was human, and what human would brandish a gun in an airport? He doubted that many would, given the security measures of the day. Turning his head slightly to the left, Joss glimpsed his assailant and rolled his eyes.
What are you doing, Ash?
Blowing you into 47 million bits,
Ash grinned.
Also, entertaining myself while we wait for your luggage.
Joss turned around then, knowing that Ash would never really cause him physical harm, and looked down at the Sharpie marker that Ash had been jabbing in his back. He raised an eyebrow, as if to ask Ash if that were really necessary, and Ash chuckled and grabbed him into a rough hug.
Good to see you, kid. But I barely recognized you. You must have grown a foot since last summer. You could pass for 20 at least, if someone wasn't looking too closely. Everybody else is waiting for us back at our temporary base of operation. Let's find that bag of yours so the party can begin.
Joss gave Ash's back a pat as they hugged, and when they separated, a kind of peace settled over him. He was home, in a weird way. He'd finally received the warm welcome that he'd very much wanted from his mom and dad. The Slayers, after all, were family to him, and a family like no other. They knew all of Joss's secrets, all of his strengths and weaknesses. Well, not all of his secrets. They knew nothing about the private job he'd taken hunting the Provis vampire in Bathory. They also didn't know that he'd failed miserably to kill said vampire, or that he'd become good friends with Vlad the same way he'd become good friends with Cyrus. He was pretty sure they didn't know anyway. Once they'd located his suitcase and grabbed a cab to take them deep into the heart of Manhattan, Joss allowed himself a small moment of happiness. Last summer had been all about training to become a slayer. This summer, he was a slayer, ready to take on vampire kind and kick their undead butts into eternity. Thinking about his stake, Joss cast a glance at their cabbie, who was busy chatting in another language into his Bluetooth headset, and said,
"Hey, Ash, how do you travel with your stake?
I mean, you can't take it in your carry-on, right?"
Ash shook his head.
"Nah, gotta check it. Which sucks considering how many vampires work in the airline industry. But you'll find out all about that once you earn your stake."
Joss paused. Dorian had delivered his great-great-great-grandfather's vampire-killing kit, complete with stake, to him at the end of last summer. He'd assumed it had been given to him at the instruction of the Society, but now he was wondering if that were the case. He didn't say anything to Ash, because the last thing he wanted to do was to have his only means of protection taken away from him. So he and Ash chatted all the way to Greenwich Village about school, what it was like to live with his cousin Henry, and how it felt being solo for the first time. By the time the cab came to a halt in front of the brownstone that was to act as their base of operations, Joss was really looking forward to seeing the other members of their little group. After Ash paid the cabbie, they exited the cab. Ash collected his bag from the trunk, and they headed up the steps to the double front doors. Joss opened the door and stepped inside, holding it for his escort. From inside came Morgan's voice.
"Ash, you back already?"
Something about the question didn't sit right with Joss, mostly because it was a question. The Slayers knew exactly who was walking into their domain, no matter what time of day or night it was. So why the question? He looked at Ash, who also seemed a bit on edge. Ash reached into his inside jacket pocket and gripped his stake, placing a finger over his lips before he replied,
"Yeah, traffic was surprisingly light. Everything okay here?"
Joss's eyes locked on his suitcase, where his vampire slaying kit was locked safely away. He wondered if it was possible to get his tools out without alerting anyone they didn't want to alert, but he highly doubted it. So he stepped ever so carefully closer to Ash and followed his lead. Ash moved down the small hallway, pausing for a moment to gesture that Joss should take point. Joss wanted to argue. Take point? He didn't even have a weapon. But Ash was the slayer with seniority here, so Joss stepped in front of him without question and readied himself for anything he could drum up in his dark imagination. Morgan called out again, his voice full of suspicion.
"We're in the parlor. You coming in?"
When Ash spoke again, his words were but a whisper.
"Be right there."
Joss's heart was racing. He had no idea what they were walking into, and very much wished that he had his stake in hand. His eyes combed the hall for potential weapons. He was eyeing the legs of a small plant stand, one of which might make a suitable pseudo-stake in a pinch,
but before he could decide whether or not that would be the best choice, Ash shoved him from behind, sending him stumbling into the parlor. Joss spun as he tripped over his own feet, trying desperately to recover, certain that vampires had somehow infiltrated their group. They were going to leap on him any second, and Joss was going to die. Or worse, be turned. He could think of no greater nightmare than that, not even the last nightmare he'd had about Cecile. A strong arm grabbed him around the neck then, and Joss stomped hard on the assailant's foot with his heel. Creighton swore loudly and released him, but Joss was free for only seconds until Patty swept his leg, knocking him on his back. As she looked down at him, she pointed a long finger to his face and said, with a sternness that made Joss want to behave,
"Stop it. We were just playing with you. You're not being attacked."
It was only at that moment, ironically, that Joss felt the weight of her foot pressing into his chest, pinning him in place. He flicked his gaze around the room, finding Ash and Morgan in the corner stifling their laughter, and Creighton sulking a bit as he rubbed the soreness from his stomped toe. On a small table sat a white cake, with big red frosting flowers all along its top edge. Patty removed her foot and took his hand, helping him to his feet. Joss turned, confused, and looked around the parlor. Bookcases and an intricate fireplace lined the walls, and the only furniture in the room were two large, leather easy chairs and the table on which the cake sat. Words that formed a lump in his throat swirled across the top of the cake in black frosting. "Welcome back, Joss." They hadn't been overrun by vampires at all. His fellow slayers were just trying to surprise him. Joss turned back to them, his heart so full of gratitude that it nearly burst, and managed to say,
"Thank you."
Ash clapped his hands together.
"Enough screwing around, let's eat."
Patty cut several slivers of cake and placed them on small paper plates, saving the biggest piece for Joss. They stood around, eating sugary yumminess and chatting, Joss's tension and sadness and looming sense of failure leaving him for the moment. As he swallowed a lump of red frosting, he said,
"Where's my uncle, anyway?"
Creighton shrugged.
"Abraham left pretty abruptly 2 days ago to fly to headquarters in London. He gave us instructions to secure a temporary base of operations here and said to await his return for further orders. At this point, kid, you know about as much as we do about why we're all here."
The front door opened and a second later slammed closed. Everyone in the room tensed, but no one spoke. Heavy footfalls carried Abraham, as if on cue, into the parlor. His face was drawn, as if something were troubling him. Joss tried to catch his eye, but before he could utter a word, his uncle said,
"A man is dead."
Joss exchanged looks with his fellow slayers, his heart sinking fast. Who was dead? And why did knowing that sit in the pit of Joss's stomach like a hot coal? He turned back to his uncle, ready for anything. He hoped, anyway. Chapter 4. Anything. Joss followed behind his uncle, crossing yet another street, and turned down an alley. They'd left the brownstone immediately after Abraham's announcement, and Joss hadn't questioned it. After all, he was there to follow orders. At the end of the alley stood a group of people, 3 men, 3 women. 2 of the men were looking back over their shoulders at the approaching slayers. The rest were focusing on whatever was lying on the ground at the center of their group. As Joss approached with his team, he, Morgan, Patty, Ash, and Creighton exchanged looks. What was going on exactly? Who was dead? Who were these people? Why were they here? And what exactly was causing the worried tingle that was crossing Joss's nerves? This had nothing to do with Vlad, or with the fact that Joss had tried and failed to kill the creature under a private contract, did it? No, that would be ridiculous. Joss was just panicking. As long as he managed to keep his cool, everything would be fine and Uncle Abraham would be none the wiser. With a deep, calming breath, Joss followed the others deeper into the alley. His stomach roiled when he saw the body lying on the ground. Its neck had been torn open on one side, but curiously, there was no pool of blood on the pavement beneath it. For a moment, Joss's world tilted, but then it righted itself again. He'd never seen gore like this. Sure, he'd seen death before, but this seemed so deliberate, so cruel.
A tall man with broad shoulders and stringy blonde hair pressed a button on his cell phone and put it to his ear.
"This is Mason. I need a cleanup in the alley between 10th and 11th off University Place. It's open to the street, so entry should be easy. A man's been killed. Fairly certain he was a victim of a vampire crime."
After a pause, he said,
"No assisted exit needed. My team's on a scene."
He hung up, and as he slipped the phone into his pocket, he addressed Joss's Slayer family.
"None of what I'm about to tell you leaves this group. Understood?"
Nods moved across the alley like a stadium crowd doing the wave. When they were finished, the newcomer continued.
"We're the Slayer team responsible for protecting Manhattan. It's a daunting task, as the vampires seem to run wild here in the city. But lately, things have taken a turn for the worse."
His eyes fell to the fresh corpse. Joss has followed, but only for a moment, as he could feel his world tilting once again.
"There's a serial killer on the loose, and we're pretty damn sure it's a vampire. The victims have had their necks torn open and are, in most cases, completely drained of blood. Local police think it's some kind of freak with a blood fetish, but this has vamp written all over it. The trouble is, we haven't been able to locate the killer."
With a glimmer of shame in his eyes, the man flicked a glance in Abraham's direction before continuing.
"After meeting with the society elders, it's been determined that perhaps our only option is to bring in a special ops team to take the case over. And thanks to the skill demonstrated by young Mr. McMillan here last summer in the Catskills, you're that team."
A small lump formed in Joss's throat, but he swallowed it quickly despite his growing nausea. No one knew that the explosion he'd caused last summer that had killed Cyrus and the other vampires had been an accident. Not for certain, anyway. But Joss had a feeling that his Uncle Abraham was highly suspicious by the way he'd acted toward Joss after the explosion. Joss couldn't tell his uncle the truth, that he hadn't really killed all of those vampires on purpose, because that would make Joss both a liar and a coward, and he very, very much preferred to be viewed as a slayer rather than either of those things. Besides, who was it hurting to keep that little detail to himself? No one. But if the truth got out, that's when the real pain would begin. The society wouldn't be very forgiving that he'd deceived them, and he could only imagine how his Slayer team would react, not to mention Uncle Abraham. No, this was a secret best kept tucked carefully in the back of Joss's mind, never to be spoken aloud.
"As far as this debriefing goes, I'm afraid we don't have much to report. There's no obvious pattern as to how the killer is choosing its victims. The victims themselves are pretty randomly chosen. Some men, some women, ages ranging from the teen years to the elderly. Like I said, I'm afraid we don't know much. But then, I guess that's why the society called you here."
Mason pursed his mouth a bit, as if something bitter had settled onto his tongue.
"What we can tell you is that all of the deaths that we believe are connected have taken place here in Manhattan. Largely in Midtown, but they've been spread out all over Manhattan. Plus, we've seen an increase in vamp activity in the last few weeks. It's like the gathering for some kind of meeting or something. So, that's it. The show's all yours. We've been told to focus on the outer boroughs. Until this serial killer is taken care of, Manhattan belongs to you."
As if on cue, the other slayers wordlessly filed back out the alley, eyeballing Abraham's team as they exited. It was clear to Joss that they weren't happy about handing over the reins, but what did they expect? If they had been charged with finding a killer and eradicating it, and had failed to do so, it was time for someone else to give it a go. Morgan shook his head.
"Am I getting this right? Is your team stepping completely aside?"
Mason pursed his lips a bit before answering. He was clearly unhappy with the change of pace, especially on his turf, but was stuck between a rock and a hard place.
"On direct order of the society, yes."
Patty stepped forward, shaking her head as well.
"You can't step down without naming a new case handler, you know that. There are no assumptions in the society."
Barely a heartbeat had passed before Mason's eyes fell on Joss.
"Joss, you're calling the shots on this case."
Joss blinked.
"What?"
"Believe me, It wasn't my decision to make this time, or I would have chosen Abraham.
Insult filled Joss to the brim. Just because he was only a teenager, Mason didn't think he was up to the task? That was bullcrap. Joss met his eyes with a falsely confident raised eyebrow. False, because he had no real idea if he meant what he was about to say. But he wasn't about to let this guy know that. I can do it. I can lead a team. I just haven't yet.
A smirk appeared on Mason's face. Well, I look forward to seeing you succeed. Everyone in the society shares my sentiment, I'm sure.
Joss folded his arms in front of his chest. Do you have any other pertinent information about the victims or killer, or are you just taking up space now?
As Mason exited, he gave Joss's shoulder a firm squeeze, the look in his dark eyes full of meaning. Good luck, little man.
Joss shook his shoulder away. He didn't need luck. He had skill and cunning. The Slayers exited, and the rest of his team breathed a collective sigh of relief. Something told Joss that Slayer teams tended not to intermingle, and maybe there was a good reason for that. Patty was looking down at the dead man, her head tilted slightly to the side.
It's so sad. I wonder who he was, if he has a family.
A hand fell on Joss's shoulder, and he looked over to see Morgan, who pulled slightly, urging Joss to come with him.
Come on, kid. There's nothing to see here. Besides, Slayer teams aren't allowed to remain during cleanup.
Why not? It made sense to stay, to examine the scene, to assist in any cleanup that had to take place. So why were they leaving? Why was this something left to a mysterious society crew and not to the Slayers themselves?
Morgan leaned closer and spoke softly.
There are levels of the society that you don't understand yet. Hell, I'm not even sure I understand them all myself. But we were told early on to exit prior to cleanup, and we do as we're told. You'd be better off listening, kid, and not questioning the rules. Just trust me on this.
Joss did trust him, but he wasn't at all certain that he completely trusted the mysterious ways of the Slayer Society. Not that he dared put voice to his doubts. He trusted their beliefs, their actions, their wisdom, but their routines seemed just a little bit off. Maybe it was because he was still green. Maybe he just needed time. That had to be it. They were the Slayer Society, after all, and he was just Joss.
There's one more thing,
Abraham spoke, his voice echoing slightly in the alley, even though his tone was eerily calm and even. Joss's heart beat solidly inside his chest.
The elders in London called me there to give me some rather disturbing news that I thought you all might find interesting. It seems my nephew took a private job in Bathory.
Joss widened his eyes and turned back to face his uncle. Morgan pulled his hand away and stepped back, as if Joss had spontaneously erupted in flames. Patty's fingers found her mouth, more horrified at the notion of Joss's betrayal than the murder victim lying before her. Ash and Creighton simply stared at him. A heavy air of disappointment filled the space, and Joss felt like he was shrinking, sinking down into the pavement, into the earth below. If he could have, he would have. Creighton shook his head. Shadows hung over the group. They looked like they'd been betrayed by one of their own, largely because they had. Joss looked from one Slayer to the next, avoiding his uncle's eyes. He had no idea what to say. He'd been caught, and could offer up no explanation or apology that would right the wrong he had done. But all he could think of to say was,
I'm sorry. I just wanted to help my mother.
It wasn't a lie. His mother had been on every pill imaginable and attended therapy with many doctors since Cecile died. The bills were ridiculously high, adding stress to an already stressful time. And deep down, Joss wondered if maybe his father blamed his inaction that night for his mother's now fragile mind. He was right to place that blame. Joss had tapped over that first domino in this scenario. As far as he was concerned, he was the one who'd stolen his family from himself, and he had no idea how to set it right again. Abraham lowered his voice even further, not so much that his words were a whisper, but so that Joss did have to focus on what he was saying in order to really hear him.
Joss has betrayed us. betrayed the Slayer Society. And by society law, such a betrayal warrants the punishment of death.
The last spoken word echoed in Joss's mind, reverberating through every cell in his body. He was going to die. His Slayer family was going to kill him. Just moments ago, they were all eating cake and laughing. Now he was going to perish in an alley at their hands for betraying them. Patty chimed in then, her words full of sharp edges.
How could you, Joss? You know what we have to do now? You've given us no choice.
Abraham held up a hand, silencing her. His eyes were on Joss, whose life was flashing through his mind like an old 8mm film.
After much pleading on my part, and promises that I only hope I can fulfill one day, headquarters has done the unthinkable. They've instructed me not to kill Joss.
Joss's heart beat twice, then paused for a moment before continuing its hesitant rhythm.
Not yet, anyway. Not unless he fails in his new assignment.
Abraham glared at him, utter disappointment oozing from his pores.
And let's make no mistake about this. This is your last chance to prove your loyalty to the society. If you fail, or if you screw up even the tiniest bit in the future, we will kill you, Joss. It's what we do, and we're damn good at it. I put my neck on the line vouching for you, begging the council to give you a second chance. If you mess this up, it won't just be bad for you. It'll be bad for me and for the team. Screwing this up would mean betraying us all in ways that cannot be forgiven. And we don't take betrayal lightly.
The harsh reality of his circumstances settled onto his nerves like clinging cobwebs. But there was no turning back now. He'd made his choice. He'd have to live with the consequences.
Thank you.
Joss blinked around at his fellow slayers, guilt eating him alive.
Thank you for another chance. I'm so sorry. I won't.
Joss, zip it.
Ash's eyebrows had drawn together in anger.
Just listen to what your uncle has to say.
Immediately, Joss snapped his mouth closed and turned his attention to Abraham, who was now addressing the entire group, even though they all understood that this was Joss's task, and his alone.
Headquarters has charged Joss with hunting down and extinguishing the vampire responsible for the Manhattan killings as quickly and as quietly as he can. We are to offer him support, as well as ensure that his loyalties to our cause are intact.
Joss swallowed hard. He wasn't certain he was up to the task, especially with his recent failure with Vlad not that far behind him. But he had to try, had to push past that self-doubt and get the job done. It was the only way to prove his loyalty to the society. He might not be able to repair his actual family, but his relationship with his Slayer family was something he could mend. He moved his eyes from one Slayer to the next as he spoke, certain not to skip over his uncle. When he spoke, it was with conviction and certainty.
I will fix this. I promise you that.
Morgan took a step closer and growled, but the sadness in his eyes belied his tone.
You'd better, little brother. You'd better.
Chapter 5. The Plan. As Joss moved toward the street, Creighton stopped him with a large hand to the chest.
Where exactly do you think you're going?
Joss blinked. He wanted to say that he was going to go look for vampires, particularly any that might be serial killers, but on further thought, that seemed like a pretty stupid reply. So instead, he simply swallowed and stared at Creighton, hoping that he would tell him exactly where it was that he was supposed to be going. Creighton sighed, reclaiming his hand.
We can't just wander Manhattan, hoping to blindly discover the killer. We need a plan, kid.
Right.
A plan. Joss nodded eagerly. Creighton crossed his arms in front of his chest and looked expectantly at Joss.
So, it's your shooting match. What's the plan?